नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Going to read just one verse this morning, text 19, Canto 3, chapter 22. In this verse, Kardamuni says yes. The previous verses, he's given the reasons why he's going to say yes. Now he says yes. And he also describes a condition for his saying yes, and the reason why he has a condition for saying yes. Two reasons. His two reasons. His condition is, well, she's qualified, I accept. The condition is, when there is a son who can care for her and is of age, then I will leave home. That's the condition. So the father knows the precondition, the potential wife knows the precondition, and they say yes to that precondition. Then he gives his two reasons. Well, he gives a reason, but in the purport is two reasons. He wishes, Kardama Muni, wishes to achieve perfection, spiritual perfection. And in that gradual progression towards spiritual perfection, one is to become completely attached to the Supreme Lord and thus not attached to anything of this world. And therefore, he uses the word non-envious. So we're going to explore that, non-envious. The nature of envy and so forth. A condition for going back home, back to Godhead, is to become free from such things. The six, our dear friends, kam, kod, lob, moha, mada, mada, matsarja, are the enemies of the conditioned soul. It's the path to become non-envious, and one isn't meant, when taking up religious marriage, to stay in religious marriage. It's not the Vedic system. There's two additional stages, and when he's determined to carry on like that, it's a the surface of it is easy, the deep part of it is very profound. We touched on it already, that, you know, that he's already at the stage of perfection. What does he need? He's seen the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord has, in advance, given the green light. I will become your son. He has the Supreme Lord as his son. He has Vatsalya Rasa. The Vatsalya Rasa is now consummated, and he goes to the forest to practice achieving perfection when he's already at the stage of perfection. It's deep. In essence, one way of looking at that particular aspect of this whole narration is like Krishna said to Arjuna, when Arjuna said, karma sannyas, and Krishna said, you don't have the qualification. So then Arjuna says, well, when I get the qualification, then karma sannyas. And Krishna says, no, when you achieve perfection, you'll also perform your prescribed duties, to set an example for others who aren't at that stage of perfection. That's what perfected souls do. So in one sense, that's what he's doing. He's showing by example. And we're going to hear something in the purport about such an example. What is the standard of such an example? As followers of Lord Chaitanya. So, here we go. Just the immediate previous verse, he's very eloquently spoken of Devahuti as her beauty is so great that she ornaments her ornaments, and amongst all ornamental women, she's the ornament of all ornamental women. Those who have not worshipped the gracious feet of the goddess of fortune cannot even perceive her. Yet she has come here of her own accord to seek my hand. He's amplifying something that Swami Bhuvamanu said, that which comes of its own accord. So she's come of her own accord. So now, therefore, ato, ataha, therefore, I shall accept this chaste girl as my wife on the condition that after she bears semen from my body, I shall accept the life of devotional service accepted by the most perfect human beings, if he wasn't there already. That process was described by Lord Vishnu. It is free from envy. Purport. I'm going to read the whole purport because it's nice. Kardama Muni expressed his desire for a very beautiful wife to Emperor Swayambhuvamanu. Kind of. He acknowledged that Devahuti is very qualified and very beautiful. And accepted the emperor's daughter for marriage. Kardama Muni was in the hermitage. Practicing complete celibacy as a brahmachari, and although he had the desire to marry, he did not want to be a householder for the whole span of his life because he was conversant with the Vedic principles of human life. According to Vedic principles, the first part of life should be utilized in brahmacharya. Two things. For the development of character, and spiritual qualities. Think back on chapter 9 of Canto 1 and what was Bhishma Dev's explanation of what does the teacher present to the student. There's additional. When he sees the quality of the student, then he may train him in some skill, some occupation, some varna suitable to his nature. But before that, and fundamental to all students, is character and spiritual qualities. The same kind of consideration as in making a marriage evaluation, qualities and character. So how well one has done as a student or in life in terms of qualities and character, then matching makes a good match. Again, like Prabhupada said, a demon marries a demon, they're happy together. Compatible, at least. So brahmachari life. In the next part of life, one may accept a wife and beget children. But one should not beget children like cats and dogs. End of paragraph. Then another long paragraph. Kardama Muni desired to beget a child who would be a ray of the Supreme Personality Godhead. One should beget a child who can perform the duties of Vishnu. Otherwise, there is no need to produce children. There are two kinds of children born of good fathers. colon. One, is educated in Krishna consciousness so that he can be delivered from the clutches of Maya in this very life. And the other, two, is a ray of the Supreme Personality Godhead and teaches the world the ultimate goal of life, as will be described in later chapters. Kardamuni begat such a child, Kapila, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality Godhead, who enunciated the philosophy of Sankhya. Great householders pray to God to send his representative so that there may be an auspicious movement in human society. This is one reason to beget a child. Another reason is, so he repeats, think back to the first one, that a highly enlightened parent can train a child in Krishna consciousness so that the child will not have to come back again to this miserable world. Parents should see to it that the child born of them does not enter the womb of a mother again, unless one can train a child for liberation in that life. There is no need to marry or produce children. If human society produces children like cats and dogs for the disturbance of social order, then the world becomes hellish, as it has in this age of Kali. In this age, neither parents nor their children are trained. Both are animalistic and simply eat, sleep, mate, and defend and gratify their senses. This disorder in social life cannot bring peace to human society. Kardama Muni explains beforehand that he would not associate with the girl Devahuti for the whole duration of his life. He would simply associate with her until she had a child. In other words, sex life should be utilized only to produce a nice child, not for any other purpose. Human life is especially meant for complete devotion to the service of the Lord. That is the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. Paragraph, last paragraph now. After fulfilling his responsibility to produce a nice child, one should take sannyas and engage in the perfectional Paramahamsa stage. Paramahamsa refers to the most highly elevated perfectional stage of life. There are four stages within sannyas life, and Paramahamsa is the highest order. Thus, Srimad Bhagavatam is called the Paramahamsa Samhita, the treatise for the highest class of human beings. The Paramahamsa is free from envy. In other stages, even in householder stage of life, there is competition and envy. But since the activities of the human being in the Paramahamsa stage are completely engaged in Krishna consciousness or devotional service, there is no scope for envy. In the same order as Kardama Muni, about 100 years ago, Thakur Bhaktivinoda also wanted to beget a child who would preach the philosophy and teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the fullest extent. By his prayers to the Lord, he had as his child Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, who at the present moment is preaching the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya throughout the world, entire world, through his bona fide disciples. End of purport. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is Bhagavat Purana. Purana means history, and history in relation to Bhagavan. Bhagavata Purana. So, teachings are presented. One of the richnesses of the first and second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, is the teachings are there. And then there are historical evidences to illustrate the teachings. The teachings are within the historical narrations. And one who has acumen and proper guidance can understand, you could say, the abstract or the essence of the historical narration. So, as a for example, we're hearing about going beyond envy and competition. Prabhupada has earlier made this distinction, griha medhi grihasta, and Kardama Muni saying, I opt out of being a griha medhi, I will act as a grihasta only. So, having made that differentiation, even amongst grihastas, there is competition and envy. Didn't say there, well, there may be. There is. Generally there is. Rarely there isn't. So what's the nature of competition and envy? So we're going to spend a little time with this topic. I'll say it at the beginning and then I'll say it again at the end. The essence of it is a material conception of I and mine. Without a material conception of I and mine, how can one enter into household life? There's disinterest if there isn't a bodily conception. If there is a bodily conception, which is pervasive in this world, household life is predominant. Rare are those who don't have such attraction, or their devotional attraction is so strong that there's disinterest. There's examples of persons from their early childhood who exhibit disinterest in household life or in anything material. Nice example is Jiva Goswami. When Jiva Goswami was still a small child, at Ramakeli, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to visit or give his association to Rupa and Sanatan. There was some correspondence. Even before they met, they heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were writing to him, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was responding. There was a relationship. He came to Ramakeli. It's described in Jiva Goswami's biography. He was just a child, the son of Anupam, the third brother. Lord Chaitanya gave his mercy to the child. It is said he placed his feet upon his head. So even before he was, able to talk, he received Lord Chaitanya's mercy. And from that early childhood, he had no interest in worldly anything. He begged his mother and father to give him deities of Krishna Balaram. And he had unflinching devotion for Krishna Balaram even as a child. He didn't do what children do, play and such things. He wasn't interested in those things. He was interested in Krishna Balaram. And even to the point where he would take Krishna Balaram to bed with him, and his parents would try to, like, take the deity away and distract him, but he wouldn't. And one day, as a small boy, his deity appeared in his dream, Krishna Balaram, and they changed themselves into Gornitai, and then again Krishna Balaram. So he understood in a way that an enlightened soul can understand things, that Krishna and Balaram are not different than Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. He heard that Lord Chaitanya had left this world when he still hadn't met him. Lord Chaitanya had left, and he was just a small boy, devastated. So when he was old enough to move and travel, he pleaded and finally got permission from his parents to go find his uncles, because his father had gone. So his mother gave permission. And he went straight to Navadvip. There he met Lord Nityananda, tour of the places of pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and Vidya Vachaspati was his teacher in scripture in Benares, and then he went to Vrindavan, where he lived for so many years. And when he was living in Vrindavan, he took shelter of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami, with his own hand, gave him deities of Radha Damodar. And with his Radha Damodar deities, it is said, the deity would play his flute and Jiva Goswami would dance for the pleasure of Damodar. And they had very intimate association in that, aside from his scholarship. So there are some souls that have, from the very beginning of life, affinity only for the personality of Godhead. And otherwise, persons have affinity for, in the bodily conception, relation with a member of the opposite sex. And so that needs to be properly guided, according to scripture, because even in the household or stage of life, there is competition and envy. So what are they? They're rooted in the bodily conception. So we'll make a little list. This is something that I learned from Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, who is a highly educated person, PhD in philosophy, and just a very a brilliant writer, and has many wonderful qualities. So he was sharing with some of us, it wasn't like in a class, it was just a discussion, the distinction between envy and jealousy. Commonly we read them almost like synonymous, envy and jealousy. But there's a difference between the two. They're rooted in the same bodily conception, eye and mind conception. But technically, if it's not used properly, then it can be, doesn't, you know, it's not used properly. But jealously guarding, you have something, and you jealously guard that something. Envy is somebody else has something, and you covet the something that somebody else has. It doesn't have to be an object, it could be something subtle. You know, an ability, or some honor, or something. Somebody has something and you covet that something, that's envy. And then there's pride. Has the same root. Pride is, I have something and I think I'm special because I have that something. Prabhupada described that when he was a small boy, he had this realization that even a pauper is proud of his penny. It's rooted in the I and mine conception. Long as one thinks of himself in terms of the body, that which is produced from the body is mine. And I'm proud of that which is mine. I and mine. And then there's mentioned here is competition. The competition is where two parties want the same something and they're competing to get the something. And household of life rooted in conception of I am this body and then there is mine, there's envy and there's competition. It's to be regulated, and certainly there can be exceptions. Certainly there can be exceptions. Srinivasacharya is a nice example where under the order of his spiritual master, because of the concern of his mother, he accepted a wife, and later on he accepted a second wife as the plan of the Lord, and from these wives, or one of the wives, he produced a pure devotee, Mataji, or daughter, Hemalata Thakurani, who became a vastly learned personality and is initiating in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and so forth. There's, one can cite other examples. That's the exception. The rule is rooted in bodily conception. There's this situation of religious marriage. To be regulated, but not permanently. So while in that, while in that situation of marriage, there's standards that one should observe and purposes that one should be striving to fulfill, and continuing with strength to direct oneself towards the goal, the unwanted things. The influence of the unwanted things, the separate interest things and the bodily conception things, the strength of them diminish. And you can say it conversely. To the degree that one is not clear of what the goal is and striving for the goal, when there's slackening, I may start with that understanding and then later slacken. And when there's not clarity and I'm not striving for the goal, then the material aspects and dimensions and features of human interaction become strong again. It's like when the light is dim, the darkness is there. Very simple. And when the light is there, the darkness is dispelled. It's how strong is the light determines how much darkness prevails. So the Vedic way is always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. The purpose of being in the Grihastha Ashram is to overcome such things as envy and competition and jealousy and pride and thinking of the person who I am married to, whether it's the husband or the wife, he or she is an object to fulfill my desires. That's the purpose. That's why I'm in marriage, because he or she is to fulfill my desires. And then he's got his and she's got hers, and if they don't match, they clash, if that's the program. But if the other is the program, then one can overcome naturally those differences. And the material contamination portion of human interaction, of husband, wife, or of any kind of human interaction. It's dependent upon one's Krishna consciousness. Both parties. So I was mentioning that Srimad Bhagavatam is a Purana in which teachings are revealed through narration, historical narration. So the interest in the narration is two. It's Krishna is at the center of it, and it's illuminating by example some teaching. like, for example, if we hear, here's the qualities of a Vaishnav, we read it in a book. And then over here, there's an exemplary Vaishnava. Oh, that's what the book meant. Or we read about ideal household life, and then you meet an ideal householder. Oh, that's what it... In many cases in our missionary work, parents who aren't trained and don't really understand Krishna consciousness, when their children get involved in Krishna consciousness, they go, oh, this is horrible. But then when they, because they have so many ideas of what Krishna, you know, what devoting oneself to spiritual life means. But when they see the lives of, they interact and, oh, that's what they're doing, that's very nice. The qualities and the respect. I mean, this is something I'm sure in the yatras that you attend, certainly the ones that I'm participating in, it's common. Relatives wish to come, they come, they don't know anything, and they're coming to the Holy Dham. And what the thing that I get, the feedback that I get is, they can't necessarily understand all the katha, but they notice the way in which the devotees interact with one another, the spirit of cooperation, the mood, the sacrifice, the harmony. I mean, it's far from perfect, but it's so outstanding in comparison to what they're used to. It's wow. And then it opens their hearts to the message. And, you know, one of the things that they take back with them commonly is chanting japa daily, when before they weren't doing anything like that. Just from that experience of Krishna conscious examples. So, here's Canto 2, Chapter 5, under the chapter, it's the beginning part of the cause of all causes. So the subject is creation, Sarga, the creation of Lord Vishnu. And in the course of creation, there has to be the elements of creation, and one of the first elements that separates out of Pradhan to form Mahatattva is false ego. You can't have material activity without false ego. And as soon as you have false ego, you've got lots of material activity. Endless material activity. So, the verse reads, this is Shukadeva Goswami speaking. I'll read the previous verse. I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna, Vasudeva, the Personality of Godhead, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent class of men, to call me the Supreme Controller. Excuse me, this is Brahma speaking to Narada. The illusory energy of the Lord, but Shukadeva Goswami is narrating it. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine. So you who study Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1 a lot, you know this nice verse where Vyasadeva, upon his fulfilling, acting according to the instruction of Narada, sees the Personality Godhead, and he sees the illusory energy behind the Personality of Godhead, yaya samohitam jiva. The illusory energy is atmanam trigunatmakam. The illusory energy is situated behind the Supreme Lord and is some mohita, jiva, bewildering the living entity, according to the three modes of nature. So when false ego mixes with the modes of material nature, all kinds of things start to happen. Mind and intelligence and the five gross elements and the five knowledge-acquiring senses, five working senses, five objects of the senses, a whole bunch of stuff starts to happen through the mode of the modes of nature mixing with false ego. But the first thing is the living entity is awarded false ego. And what's false ego? Misidentification of who I am with what I am not. And then from that false ego, that I conception comes, its byproduct. Mine. What is mine is which comes from me. That's what's mine. And if I am this body, then what's mine is what comes from this body. The fruits of my work. My children, my wealth, my home, my this and that, my. And according to this verse, this is talking nonsense. Babbling nonsense. But that's the nature of the illusory energy. It makes people crazy. And they think that those who are spiritualists are crazy. Fanatics. Or whatever, you know, some bad word. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence being ashamed of her position. That's when one is situated like Vyasa was situated, fixed upon the personality of Godhead. But when one is not fixed upon the personality of Godhead, the illusory energy is at play. And that's, so now back to us, or back to Kardama Muni and then to us. Kardama Muni recognizes he's a learned person. He's a sense-controlled person. He has a desire person. But he knows how to utilize that desire in such a way it will serve for elevation, not serve for degradation. And his goal is very clear. This non-envious position. So I'll accept this household position for some time, either A or B or both. In his case, it's both. A, beget children that are qualified to not take birth again in this material world, or B, a personality of Godhead, or a ray of the personality of Godhead, in his case, the Shaktivesh Avatar, Kapila Dev, who will widely give transcendental teachings to the whole world. Beyond this, one has to uproot the bodily conception, even in the midst of that which is driven by bodily conception. It's like, you know, it's a challenge. Let's be clear about it. Household life is a challenge because one is placing voluntarily in one's life the objects which one has a tendency to be the enjoyer of and then not act as the enjoyer of, but in a different mood, in a mood of service to the personality of Godhead. It's a challenge. Take the other one. Stay in the position of renounced. That has its challenges. Pick your favorite one. Or act according to that which is suited to your nature. This is the place of strength for some. This is the place of strength for other. And if one is going to take one or the other, do it properly. Because you don't do either one or the other properly, and it's embarrassing. It's entangling. It's doesn't lead to elevation. It leads to degradation. So do it properly. And the indication of how to do it properly is there. One needs to not act in the bodily conception, yet at the same time carry out the duties as if. It's very similar, what is in the bodily conception. It's very similar to what Lord Chaitanya advised Raghunath Das Goswami. Go back. Don't behave like this. Go back, perform your duties, as if you're attached, but inwardly you cultivate attachment to Krishna. And in due course of time, Krishna will show his favor and you'll be released from that situation, which is what happened. He followed the instruction. Inwardly, he cultivated attachment to Krishna, while externally he behaved as if he was like everybody else. And he became freed from that circumstance and achieved perfection. How that plays out in different souls' lives is naturally very individual. It's not one way is for everybody. But the principles are for everybody. And these principles include detaching oneself from bodily conception or false ego conception and being driven by false ego purposes. And in its place of the false ego purposes are the true ego purposes, the real interest of the soul, which is the interest of Krishna, and place that first. Strive to place that first within whatever one's circumstance, whether it's student life, family life, vanaprasth life, sannyas life. He's first class, so he's striving for the Paramahamsa situation, where there's no envy, like we hear of the Goswamis. Dira dira janapriyo nirmatsaro. Because they weren't envious. Again, what does envy mean? Somebody has something, and I wish I had that something that somebody has. Well, they didn't have the desire to have something that somebody else has. So they weren't a threat to anybody, because they didn't want anything that anybody had, whether it was the gentle or the ruffians, the dira or the adira personalities, and both were living in Vrindavan, and they were respected and regarded very, very nicely by both, because they were not envious. They didn't want something. Genuinely. And that's the stage that we're to strive for and aspire for and cultivate. And in between now and then, there are these other features of eye and mind conceptions acting. And we subordinate them or regulate them according to teachings of the scripture. And Prabhupada specifically describes the process of chanting as the most effective means of eradicating that tendency if we chant without offense, if we chant with full attentiveness or strive. If you can't chant with full attentiveness, the mind is distracted. What's the mind distracted by? It's, you know, being the enjoyer of something. Anyway, that's a whole lengthy description. But to fix oneself in offenseless chanting, or strive to fix oneself in offenseless chanting, when chanting, there's only one activity, taking shelter of the holy name. And there's genuine shelter. Nija Sarva Shaktis, all the potencies, everything is there. The whole spiritual world is there. Combine that with the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, then proper direction and guidance in our life, and keeping very clear what the goal is and how to get there, along with chanting. And I'm really looking forward to visiting the Holy Dham and other wonderful of the five most potent items. It's very wonderful just anticipating entering into the Holy Dham. and sharing the realities, transcendental realities of the Holy Dham with others. Whew. Very elevating, very, very uplifting and purifying. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes? Sure. Sure. Service. Those who have that quality, I can also receive that quality from that generous soul if I turn my receiver on. And they're ready to deliver, just, you know, Krishna needs to be pleased that I'm relating to that person in the proper way. Krishna is pleased, and then it's easy to say, then it's another thing to come to that position. Anything else? Okay, well, you're like enthusing me very much by your eager questions, so I'll end with telling a nice Radharani story. In the early publication of Nectar of Devotion, there was a painting that's not presented in the current versions of Nectar of Devotion, at least the ones that I've seen. But it's illustrating a little passage that's in Nectar of Devotion. So it's quoted by Rupa Goswami, and following him, historically or chronologically, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described in detail the following story. So in other words, what I'm about to narrate is bona fide, it's not just a nice story. Srimati Radharani requested permission from her husband and her mother-in-law to observe a particular austerity in the month of Magh, coldest month. Early in the morning, before the sun would rise, she and her friends would go to the river Jamuna and take their bath in the river Jamuna for the whole month, every morning. Very cold. Very, very cold, but an austerity, particular vrata. So she was going every morning. Katila, the sister of Abhimanyu, was suspicious. So she shared her suspicion with her mother, Jatila. I don't know what Radharani is up to. I want to find out what Radharani's up to. And Jatila said, very good, very good. You figure out a way to find out what Radharani's up to. So Katila decided that after Radharani left one morning, she went just after that to Nandagram to find out what Krishna was up to. So she visited in Nandagram. And they said, oh, how nice to see Katila. Why have you come so early? Oh, I'm just looking to see for the welfare of Gopal. I said, oh, well, Gopal, for the whole month of Magh, he's observing a vrata, where he goes very early in the morning to the Jamuna to take his morning bath. So Sherlock Holmes, Katila, is going, ah, now I'm my suspicion was being confirmed. But she didn't know where, because the Jamuna is long, where to find Krishna. But in the sand of Vrindavan, the footprints of Krishna were marked, and she was following the footprints of Krishna. Although it was just the light of the moon, she was very carefully following the footprints of Krishna, which is a nice meditation. And as she got closer and closer to the river Jamuna, one of the messengers of Radha saw her coming. And so the messenger of Radha went very quickly to the grove, which was very near Keshigat, where Radha and Krishna and the gopis were together. And she entered into the grove, or the bower of trees, and Radha and Krishna were happily enjoying in the social company of all the gopis. And she didn't want to disturb the mood, but she wanted to convey the message. And so she spoke, "Oh, Srimati Radharani, you are the most wonderful and fortunate person in all the three worlds, because here you are enjoying the company of Shyamasundar, who is the delight of the heart and the mind of all young girls," and, you know, describing very nicely. And then, "Alas, alas, I have to bear some difficult news. Katila is coming directly in this direction, and she's in a very angry mood, and I don't know what's going to happen." So she delivered the message. And the gopis all stood and were alarmed. "Oh, what to do, what to do?" And Krishna said, "Don't worry. I'll take care of everything. And you just stay here and be very peaceful." So he left. Now, Krishna, as you know, he can, as he assumed identical likenesses of each cowherd boy and each calf, he can do anything. But in this case, rather than just manifesting himself in a certain way, he went to Vrindadevi to give her some service. And Vrindadevi gave Krishna an Abhimanyu disguise. Abhimanyu is the brother of Katila. So from the duty, he found out where Katila was, and he went straight to where Katila was and found her. He said, "Oh, my dear sister, what has brought you here so early in the morning? Maybe you've come to perform some austerity here. I was searching for one of my calves," the calf strayed from the herd, and the herd, because he was speaking in the same voice as Abhimanyu, "and I'm in great distress. I haven't been able to find my calf. But, you know, please tell me what has brought you here." And she divulged, "My dear brother, I'm very concerned that your wife may be polluted and defiled by this debauchee, Krishna, this blackish boy. He's always full of mischief, and she's come here, but he is also observing the same vrata, and I want to catch them." And Abhimanyu said, "Oh, very good. You're always my well-wisher. Thank you very, very much. I want to go immediately to Mathura and tell Kamsa he should do something to punish this young... He should punish Nanda Maharaj as well as Nanda Nandana for the wrongdoings. But before I go, I have another idea. Why don't you find out exactly where they are? And if they're up to mischief, you come back right here. I'll just wait. And you tell me exactly what has happened." So she's feeling empowered. "Okay, my brother, I'm protecting my brother." And so she went, starting from Kaliagat and down and down and down until she reached Keshigat. And there she saw a whole group of Radharani's friends. And her first words were, the gopi that greeted her said something like, "Oh, Katila, how fortunate that you have come here in this auspicious month of Magh, here by the banks of the river Jamuna. What has brought you here?" And in a haughty voice, Katila said, "You know why I'm here. Don't pretend anything. Just by the fragrance I can tell that Hari has come." And one of the words for Hari can be translated as lion. So the gopi said, "Oh, thank you very much for warning us of the danger of having a lion in our vicinity, because of your acute sense of smell. Now we know that we have great danger. Thank you, thank you." And Katila said, "You stop your tricks and word jugglery. You know what I'm here for. I want to see where is Krishna and Radha. That's my mission. You stop your games and stop talking like you're some kind of religious girls. I know what your program is." And she said, "Well, I don't know what you're talking about, but you know, you're free to do all your investigating." He said, "I see that grove of trees right over there. I want to enter." And the gopi said, "Oh, I wouldn't advise that. This is a place where the demigods go. And the demigods have placed a lock on the entranceway. And what virtuous young girl would dare enter a place where the demigods have placed a lock? You stop talking like this. I'm not going to pay any attention. I'm entering even without your help." And she kicked the door and went inside. And inside she found a broken garland and a pearl necklace. So she had her hard evidence, not circumstantial. "Aha! This is the garland of Nanda Nandana and the necklace of Radha. And I'm going to take this to my brother, and Radharani's in big trouble." So Radharani came with her arms across, saying, "My dear Katila, what nonsense are you talking?" She said, "Don't use this kind of words with me. I know what kind of person you are. I know what kind of person Krishna is, and you're in big trouble." She said, "You're a mad woman. This is not my necklace, and that's not Krishna's garland. And I invite you, you take this to every single home in all of Vrindavan to make a fool of yourself by a false accusation. Go right ahead. I challenge you." And Katila realized Radharani gets really tough, and she's got all of her friends, and they might beat me up, and so I better watch my step. So she said, "Well, you'll see what happens. You'll see what happens." And she left. She went to see her brother Abhimanyu, who was actually Krishna in disguise as Abhimanyu. Said, "Look at this. Here's Radharani's necklace, and here's Krishna's garland. And, you know, this is hard evidence." And Abhimanyu said, "Very good. You've done a good job, Katila. But let's think this through very carefully. If I go directly to Kamsa, then it may appear a bad name will come to our family. But I have another idea. I have a very good friend, as you know, Govardhan Mala, and Chandravali is his wife. And I can tell Govardhan Mala, see this necklace and see this garland. This is the necklace and garland of Chandravali and Krishna. And you have a very close relationship with Kamsa. So you go and tell Kamsa, because not only your wife, but my wife too, and others may be at risk in our kingdom, and he's the king, and so he's duty-bound to protect. So I'll spare the good name of our family, and we won't be implicated." Oh, she said, "Oh, this is a very good idea. So thank you. I'll take the necklace and garland. Thank you." The evidence was gone. And he said, "I'm going to go straight away to Govardhan Mala. You go back home and give protection, because I suspect that this debauchee is going to try to enter into our home pretending that he's me. So with your mother, you stand at the rooftop, and I'm going to get Govardhan Mala to bring something like, you know, 100 soldiers and 10 men on horseback to come and arrest Nanda Maharaj and Nanda Nandana. You wait and see. You wait and see. So if this debauchee comes and pretends that he's me, you stand at the rooftop, the gate, above the gate of our home. And if he comes, you throw, one version says you throw dirt balls, another says you throw dung balls and hit them. Don't let him enter. So they've got a good plan. Katila goes back. Radharani and the gopis go back to their homes. Krishna, now back in the, still with his Abhimanyu disguise, spends 2-3 hours waiting, doing his activities, pastimes. And then he goes and confirms with Jatila. He said, just as I thought, Kamsa is coming with his 100 soldiers and 10 men on horseback. But this rascal, he's coming in disguise as me. So then he retold them, stand at the rooftop and I'm going to go protect Radha. So he went into Radha's room and Krishna and Radharani are enjoying pastimes together. And so the painting that's in Nectar of Devotion is Jatila and Katila are on the rooftop or above the gate with their dirt balls, saying, get out of, because Abhimanyu was off making purchases of cows and he needed to get some more money, so he came back. Get out of here, you imposter. This is the real Abhimanyu. You imposter. We know your tricks. You're not going to enter this house, not for anything. He said, what are you talking about? I'm your son. I'm your brother. Get out of here. And they started throwing their dirt balls at him. And he thought, my mother is a little imbalanced, but I think she's gone crazy. I need to find an exorcist to take care of her situation. And he departs, and that's the end of the story. I mean, I'm sure there's other episodes of the story, but that's where Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ends. He ties a whole series of writings that's called pranks. I don't know what the word in Sanskrit is, but translated as pranks. In different, very intriguing ways, Radha and Krishna engage in very delightful activities of associating together, where it seems that there's opposition for their meeting, which just enriches the pastime of their meeting. And Jatila and Katila serve in that way. They make opposition, make it difficult. But then the gopis, and sometimes just the gopas, they assist in making the meetings of Radha and Krishna. And in an indirect sense, Jatila and Katila are also assisting. It just makes it flavorful because of all the variety of happiness they experience together. Hare Krishna. Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai.